Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Oh, there we go, with Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com. You just saw him flash up on the screen there. The Ed Morrissey Show podcast, of course, every Tuesday. Andrew and I like to sit down outside the paywall and talk about what's going on in politics, the media, football, I guess. I don't know how your team did. My team won, actually, this week, but I know that they beat a pretty good team. I don't know how the Browns did.
Well, this is the one week of the year when I can say the Browns didn't lose.
Oh, they're on a bye. Okay.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. I guess both of our teams did all right. We had a bye early in the year. So, all right. We got lots to talk about. First off, you know, the Schumer shutdown continues, and you flagged something from CBS News. You've got a couple of great posts over up at Red State's VIP section. You had one from Thursday says, "Is it possible legacy media infected by positive change?" Being an interesting word.
That sort of grew out of our conversation last week and some of the changes that are just beginning, but they're hopeful. The Washington Post, where Jeff Bezos is making some changes to the editorial page, and some of the more woke people have left. And he's got a whole new bunch of senior editors. And CBS, of course, with its new ownership and bringing in Barry Weiss as the head of the news. And then the owner of the Los Angeles Times making some significant changes to reduce the woke, but to make it more broadly friendly. So there's some science, and so I did my weekly audio commentary on that change and the cautious optimism that spawns.
Well, okay, and so you did that on Thursday. Sunday, Donald Trump appeared on 60 Minutes with Nora O'Donnell as the interviewer. Not Leslie Stahl this time, you'd notice, but it was with Nora O'Donnell. And immediately released within an hour after the broadcast was over, they had released the full unedited conversation between Trump and Nora O'Donnell, which I think is actually, and also, excuse me, apparently the transcript too, which I think was actually a pretty good improvement over what happened the last time.
It is. I think that was part of the agreement. The financial settlement was that they would not edit.
They edited it for broadcast. They did edit for broadcast because it was about a 40-minute conversation. They took it down to 27 minutes, I think it was, for the show. But then they, afterward, they released the entire
thing.
Yeah, which I'm okay with. I think that that's
fine. Oh, yeah.
Chuck Schumer said he was going to file a complaint with the FCC. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't, but I don't pay a lot of attention to granny eyeglass.
Granny eyeglasses is a good way of putting it. Yes. He was a little butthurt. First off, I mean, I took a look at the timestamp on this tweet, right? Because he tweeted this out. "I'm going to file an FCC complaint using the exact same language Trump used with the earlier one." The problem in the earlier one was that they had edited Kamala Harris's answer and refused to release the entire unedited video and transcript, right?
So because it was so biased, the editing.
Right. I guess you can submit a complaint, but the complaint was that they didn't produce the unedited interview and they already had done it. So imagine having Donald Trump living rent-free in your house, in your head. Post at 2 o'clock in the morning, I guess, because it was timestamped like 12:51 a.m. here in Central Time, right? So it has to be like 2 o'clock in the morning or close to it. So either Chuck himself or his staffer was so butthurt over this interview I have a post. By the time this goes up, it will already be up because that post is coming up on Monday evening. But I have a post written up about this called Chucky's Ungloved. This guy is shadow boxing and still losing. He's losing to the shadow.
Oh, he's lost. Yeah. This is part of the diverse Democrat Party leadership, both of whom are from Brooklyn. Yeah. Okay.
Point. And then, of course, AOC is all, well, she's from the Bronx. I keep saying Brooklyn, but I guess she's from the Bronx. It's another borough over.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's all New York. It's all New York. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it went well. I think Trump, you know, Trump had his moments. I don't think that there was a whole lot there that was controversial. The only thing he really said was that Chuck Schumer was like a kamikaze pilot. He's a basket case. And he's not going to allow himself to be extorted by Chuck Schumer, which is, I think, what really had Chuck Schumer up at 2 o'clock in the morning on early Monday morning. Yeah. What was your take? I don't know how much of it you've seen. I've read through the transcript. I've seen a few of the clips, but I don't see it seemed pretty normal for Trump, which is to say it was pugnacious at times. But you know, the other thing is that Trump is doing this all the time. It's not unusual. It's unusual. I think the one-on-one's unusual. He hasn't done a lot of one-on-ones, but he's talking to reporters every single day. You can't even shut the guy up.
There's no, he's the most accessible commander in chief, surely, that we've ever had.
At least in the modern era, right? I mean, I would say maybe Teddy Roosevelt was somebody that might be hanging out with reporters a whole lot. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's some similarities between Trump and Teddy Roosevelt. You know, I keep biting the inside of my lip. Sorry about that. Temperamentally, though, as well as policy-wise, and look, I remember the Teddy Roosevelt presidency. I remember you and I sitting around chatting about it.
You remember Teddy Roosevelt era?
I remember the Teddy Roosevelt presidency. You and I used to sit around talking about it during a.
That's right. You know, I have a CD of the earliest recordings of presidents, and Teddy is one of them. And to my disappointment, he has a kind of squeaky voice. I mean, when you see him speaking with a mustache and the eyeglasses pinched on his nose and his hand in the air, you think, oh, what a booming voice. Because he didn't have microphones. They had recording, but they didn't have microphones for crowds. So if you wanted to be heard, you had to speak up. And remember, he got shot in Milwaukee. Fortunately, his speech was by an angry New York, of course, bartender. Fortunately, he had his speech and his eyeglass holder in his pocket, so the bullet was slowed. His speech was folded. It was 50 pages, so that's the bullet had to go through 100 pages of paper. And his metal eyeglass case. He still gave the speech. They wanted to take him to the hospital. He said, no. I'm here to give a speech, and I'm going to give the speech. I'm not going to give the guy the satisfaction of stopping me. And when they did take him to the hospital and treated the wound, but he refused, wisely, I think, to let them take the bullet out. So when he died in the 1920s, he died with a bullet in him. The reason he did that, of course, was because his predecessor that he inherited the office from, William McKinley, got shot in Buffalo. And when they took the bullet out, he got an infection. There was no penicillin yet. And that's what killed McKinley, not the bullet. It was the infection. So Teddy wisely said, no, let's just go with it. And of course, he was a soldier too. So so he gave the speech anyway. And that's another reason to like him. And there's a picture I have. My son saw it of the when Abraham Lincoln got shot. They took him on the train back to Illinois to bury him, but on the way they stopped along the way and had funeral parades. And the one in New York, they were going up, the cortege with soldiers was going up Broadway, and there was a picture taken from a tall building nearby of the horses and the soldiers going up Broadway. But if you look in the upper left-hand corner, the house that was the Roosevelt Mansion, in the bedroom window is a little boy and his sister. And that little boy was Teddy Roosevelt watching the body go by.
I think I'd heard something about that. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of amazing,
that's
really.
That's amazing, right. And then he grew up, and of course he had terrible, it was asthma. And on the same day, his wife and mother died. So he was kind of devastated, understandably. And so that's when he went to the Dakotas and got all active in the fresh air and came back a new man. You gotta love the guy. So anyway, that's off topic, but I thought it was historically interesting.
Well, yeah. Definitely historically interesting. By the way, the funny thing about the voice too, Patton had a really high pitched voice. You know, people think of George Patton, they think of George C. Scott's interpretation of it with a gravelly, the deep gravelly voice, because George C. Scott was a great actor, right? And but Patton actually had a high pitched voice and was always kind of self conscious about it, and he explained one time, he says, that's the reason why I use so many curse words, because otherwise people wouldn't take me seriously.
I didn't know that.
I love
stuff like that. I love stuff.
Yeah, Patton was a character. Patton was an interesting guy. He was brilliant. He was definitely a character. And there's recordings of his voice. And if you're expecting George C. Scott, you're going to be disappointed, because he had this kind of high, reedy, high pitched voice. But he's, he salted his language, in part at least, right, because of that. So yeah.
Accordingly.
Well, I think
Rommel, you magnificent bastard.
Yeah. So instead of Rommel, you magnificent bastard, I read your book. It was more like Rommel, you.
I had a classmate in my military high school who became an actor, and he was Patton's aide in the movie, George C. Scott's aide in the movie, who got killed when they were watching the attack.
I know who you're talking about. Yes.
Morgan Paul. And he got killed there. And then I guess he later died in the AIDS epidemic. But he was an actor, and I was in a couple of plays with him in the student dramas at my military school. How about that?
It's a great movie, by the way. Patton's a great movie because it's both a war movie and an anti-war movie. Zulu's the same way. We were talking about Zulu. It's both a war movie and an anti-war movie, because he did some heroic things. He does some heroic things. He does some really not so heroic things too. And they give it, I think, a pretty good mix of it. And it's brilliantly balanced as both a war movie and an anti-war movie. And Zulu may be the only other movie that I can think of that actually hits that mark. And you have to watch both to understand that and to be to be watching for those themes. And it ends up saluting the warrior while lamenting the war. And I think that's true of both films. Both films are just absolutely brilliant films. Two of my favorite films. And once you start listening to that theme song from Patton, it will take you a week at least to get that thing out of your head. It is so good. It is such a...
We have seen politicians appear on stage in front of a giant flag too, I guess, since yes. then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a motif. All right. The other thing that you're writing about was the third term thing, which I find hilarious, right? This is the troll. This is the troll to end all trolls. You know, you're not going to get, he's not going to run for a third term. He's not going to run for vice president and then swap with JD Vance. I mean, this, if you listen to the, I did see this clip where O'Donnell sort of presses him in the 60 Minutes interview about kind of quasi endorsing JD Vance as his successor, and Trump doesn't bite. He says there's a lot of great people in the Republican Party, and that's, people are gonna have to make that decision when the time comes. But
you know, when he was in on the airplane from Tokyo to Korea last week, he said, no, if you read the 22nd Amendment, I can't really run there. And like you just said, there are a lot of great people. And he mentions Marco Rubio first and then J.D. Vance as leading characters to succeed him. We'll see what happens. It's a long time to go. But he wouldn't want to pick one now. He may be a kingmaker come 2028, but he wouldn't want to pick one now because he's got Marco Rubio in four different positions, and he wants both of them to be doing well and to be dedicated to him, as they both certainly are.
Well, and again, you know, this is one of these things where I think that this is half deliberate misdirection and half just Donald Trump having fun watching everybody scramble, right?
Yeah. It's trolling, you know, trolling the light. Yeah.
Trolling, right. He's just trolling. But I think part of it's misdirection too, because again, one of the things that's going to happen, and maybe there's even a third part, which is the political implications of being a lame duck president. We've talked about this, right? Early in the process, I warned you probably don't want to elect somebody to a second non-consecutive term because they are almost automatically a lame duck once they first get into office, right? Maybe not the first 2 years, but certainly the second 2 years. And that's not going to be long enough. Now, everybody else in their wisdom said, no, we're going to pick Trump. Okay. And it's working out well. But I think part of this is to push back on the lame duck aspect of what Trump is doing right now. And it's also to protect, you know, the bench that he's talking about from being the center of attention, because once everybody starts thinking of him as a lame duck, then it's going to be open season on JD Vance, Marco Rubio, Ron DeSantis, if Ron DeSantis decides to get into the race. I actually think that it's going to be a fairly quick primary, and it may end up just being between Vance and Rubio, and maybe they don't even run against each other. Everybody may end up lining up behind Vance as president and Rubio as vice president. But that's a discussion for another time. The point is that Donald Trump is basically running interference for these guys so that they're not the focus of the media. He's the big pinata. Because first off, he can take it. And second off, he kind of enjoys it. He enjoys the battle.
Yeah, he does. He enjoys playing him. He enjoys seeing people run around in circles, and it's fun to watch as long as it's not his main focus, playing with the media. But he's very good at it, and like you said, he's the most accessible modern president we've ever had. And this time he's doing it with more discipline. The first term he would go out sometimes 4, 5, 6 times a day and talk about whatever he wanted to talk about and pick fights with other people and distract it from his main message. So either 4 years in exile or Susie Wiles or a combination have taught him to be more disciplined, and he is. So, more credit to him. And it's also it's kind of a tribute that there is that talk. I mean, first of all, The media loves him. You know, they had all kinds of economic troubles when he was not in office after 2021. And so he's great for business. And you'll see how they try to tie everything to Trump, because Trump in the headlines brings a lot of business online and on TV.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, he brings a lot of business. He definitely does that.
I mean, which is good for him. Yeah. I mean,
it's good for him. It's good for Republicans. It's a smart way to approach media management. And I think that that's what this is getting at. And it gets back to, I think he understands the media space better than he did 4 years ago. Yeah. And I think he understands better how to work within that. But, and again, getting back to your other column, that media space is changing. And he's been part of the reason why it's changing. He's won two big lawsuits, or at least he's gotten two big settlements, one from ABC News and Disney, the other one from Paramount and CBS News. People are starting to, the media environment is starting to change. Now, whether or not that's a good thing or not, I mean, we can all talk about that, but what I can say is the media environment, if the media wants to survive, the environment has to change. And I think we're now starting to see the Washington Post, it really actually does seem to be changing, even in the reporting aspect of it. It seems to be getting a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Balanced.
Yeah. It seems to be getting more balanced. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the word.
Well, the New York Times today. Yeah, I absolutely. The New York Times today remains unbalanced.
Unbalanced is a good word for it too, by the way. Yeah.
The news is that Trump says the government, his administration, will partially fund the SNAP program. Okay, which is, you know, what, 42 million people. I mean, that's a big chunk of change there. And it's damaging if the media, as they already have, starts talking about starving children and all that. Two questions. One, why are 42 million on the aid like that? And goodbye popcorn and other stuff with those coupons. But second, he's smart to do, it's a kind of damage control. However, with the headline, could have been, Trump says his administration will partially fund SNAP. New York Times headline was, Trump says his administration will only partially fund SNAP. So you can see that's the kind of bias that sneaks, that's not factual. And you could argue, as I'm sure the editors did, say, well, he is partially funding it. And you would expect them to be full, but who would? Nobody would. You're talking billions and billions of dollars. So it's just part of the subtle thing that requires people now, with so many online sources of news, to be more discriminating. And I don't think many people are. I wish they were, but I think they walk through the living room and they hear 8 seconds of TV news and they think that's the truth. And it isn't.
Yep. Well, that brings us to the topic that you highlighted for me. And this is not something you've written about. This is something that you flagged over the weekend for me, which is a CBS News poll showing rising concern over government shutdown impact on the economy, Americans personally. President Trump, both parties draw negative ratings for handling the shutdown. Basically, CBS News poll is showing that nobody is getting the entire blame. It's a pox upon both houses sort of reaction. I have an issue with this, because you can pull on anything, right? This is like betting. We were talking about, you know, sports betting the last episode, right? It's like betting. You can bet on anything, right? Doesn't mean it's meaningful. It's meaningful to people. So if you have a pollster who calls up, and I swear they're still calling me up, I just keep telling them I'm not interested. They used to ask, do you work in the media? And I would just wait for that question to pop up so I could say, yes, I do. And they would say, oh, well, never mind. Thank you very much. They don't do that anymore. So now I just have to tell them to, you know, to F off. Politely. Yeah. Politely. I do try to be polite unless, like what happened, I think it was on Saturday. They get rather insistent. And then I am not quite so nice about it. Here's the issue that I have with this, is that this is inside the Beltway stuff. Nobody really thinks that the government's going to go unfunded from now until the midterm elections, right? I don't think it's going to, I think on Wednesday, these guys are going to pass the CR. They're waiting for the elections tomorrow, or as we're recording, or today, as you guys are watching this, they're waiting for the elections. Once the elections are done, you're going to get the 8 Senate Democrats are going to flip, let the CR come to the floor. It'll pass. Donald Trump will sign it. They'll have to do another one now because this one only runs through the 21st. And then they'll have their negotiations and blah, blah, blah. The people just don't care about this stuff. It doesn't matter who they are blaming for this shutdown. And they just don't care. So today I wrote a piece and it's behind the paywall. So if you're watching this and you're not a VIP member, sign up. As long as the shutdown is going, big sale, 74% off. But the point is, and I lost the point because I was doing the sales pitch. What the hell was I saying?
they're going to do it on Wednesday.
Oh, they're going to do it on Wednesday, right? There's no stakes involved in this. And I'm looking at this is what I was going to say for this post that I wrote about foreign money coming into the Democrat Party. And I think that this is actually a bigger topic. Maybe we'll tackle it another time. Maybe we'll tackle it next week. But Don Serber pointed this out. There's a bunch of this stuff about foreign money and USAID money that's flowing into organizing organizations that are affiliated with the Democrat Party that are really driving a lot of the GOTV and candidate recruitment stuff. And the Democrats are completely disconnected from the American electorate. You take a look at Harbert-Harris Caps, right? Harbert-Harris Caps has been remarkably consistent all year long about there being broad support for the very policies that Donald Trump has put in place that Democrats are shrieking the most about, including deporting illegal aliens, okay?
Yeah.
And not just the criminal illegal aliens, but all illegal aliens. That's a 56-44 position in the Harbert-Harris Caps poll. And that's been consistent all year long. 78-22 for criminal illegal aliens and 56-44 for all illegal aliens. Americans support this. The Democrats not only are not adapting to that, they're actively calling anybody who supports that names. Fascists, right? Nazis and stuff like that. So they're not responding to the American electorate. The question is, why? That's what political parties are designed to do, especially American two-party system. And the answer, I think, is follow the money. The money is coming in from outside the country. Not only so, I'm not saying it's illegal. Maybe some of it is, but I mean, mostly it's done legally. But that's where their constituency is. Their constituency is more and more outside the United States, among the people
who...
George Soros, and not just George Soros, you know, what's the guy's name in Switzerland? Wyss is another one who started Arabella. And that's their constituency. They don't really care what American voters are saying. They're fronting money.
Yeah, they go with the money, and that's one big reason why they were so stupidly supporting trying the collusion to hide Biden's troubles. And as one result, Congress's approval rating is the lowest ever, 15%.
Democrats have their lowest. Democrats are 19%.
The Democrats have been captured by, as you say, the money, and they're also captured by their own narrative, which is driving the leftist, extreme leftist agenda, and the woke, and it's self-destructive, but I guess that's where the money is. You'd think by now, we were what? Geez, almost exactly what? 368 days now from the midterm, and you'd think that they would be recruiting people who were like-minded, wanting to win, not following their rigid narrative agenda. It takes a lot of time to get ready for a midterm, even more for a presidential election. Recruiting, obviously I would prefer the conservative candidates to win, so I'm not devastated by Democrats doing stupid things and staying caught in the tar pit like elephants in medieval times, but they're or mastodon, but it's you need two vibrant competing political parties in a fully functioning democracy, and we have periods where we don't have that. Republicans dominated in the late 1800s because of the Civil War and freeing the slaves. They came right back, Republicans did, after 64. I mean, they were shellacked in 64 with Goldwater and Miller against Johnson and Humphrey. And they won considerably 2 years later in the midterms in 1966. And then they won the first of five out of six presidential elections in 1968. So they can come back, but it doesn't look like Democrats are now.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, look, we're just about done here with the podcast, but I think we have to get to some jokes of the week. I think we've got a little bit of
cleanup here. You go with yours. I've got a couple. I'll look them up while we're talking.
I've got a couple. I'll start us off with the longer of the two. Okay. So this guy goes into a psychologist or psychiatrist and says, "You know, doc, I've really been having some strange dreams for the last month." And the psychiatrist goes, "Well, okay, what are the dreams?" And he says, "Well, it's like there's a World Cup soccer game going on, right? He says, and every night I see a soccer match, but with donkeys." He says, "It's driving me crazy. It's all I think about all day long." And the doc thinks about it for a minute. He goes, "Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure you're getting some good sleep. I'm going to give you a prescription. Take two pills tonight before sleeping, and you won't have these dreams at least tonight." And the guy says, "Well, thank you, doctor. I really appreciate that." And he gets up and he turns back. He says, can I ask you a question?" And the doctor says, "Sure." He says, can I start this medicine tomorrow night rather than tonight?" And the doc says, "Well, I guess, why not tonight?" And he says, "Well, tonight's the finals."
I like that.
All right, so let's go with your jokes. You've got your jokes ready.
Okay, I got a couple of Halloween jokes. They're old, but they're Halloween. Jay Leno said, "As in every year, hospitals all over the United States are X-raying children's Halloween candy for dangerous substances. Unfortunately, thanks to Obamacare, now there's a $1,000 copay." And David Letterman said, "I did not know that Halloween is the official start of the holiday shopping season." Well, for women anyway. For guys, the beginning of the holiday shopping season is Christmas Eve.
Yeah, right, exactly. Very true. Very true. All right. My last joke is also at least Halloween adjacent. Let's just call it Halloween adjacent. So three vampires walk into a bar, right? This is already, three vampires walking into a bar. Waitress comes over and asks the first vampire what he'd like. And then first vampire says, "I would like some blood." And so the waitress turns to the second vampire and says, "What would you like?" He says, "I would like some blood." And she asks the third vampire, "What do you want?" He says, "I would like some plasma." The waitress says, "All right, let me see if I've got this. Let me see if I've got this order right. You want two bloods and a blood light." That's both of those jokes are from jokesoftheday.net. I love jokesoftheday.net. It's we always
It's
say
good
most of them
stuff.
are clean. Most of them are clean, not all of them, but most of them are clean over at jokesoftheday.net.
Well, we have to trust you as censor, Ed.
Oh yeah, that would work out well. You know, this isn't a joke, but it's truth, right? Somebody, and I forget who it was. I think it was a comedian who did this as part of a routine, said that his, I think it was his daughter came to him and said, "Why do dads tell such lame jokes? You know, what is it with the dad joke thing? Because it's a real thing." And he says, "You want to know why dad jokes, why dads tell dad jokes? Because they can't tell the jokes they really like." He says they have to find jokes they can tell around their kids. That's the dad joke. That's the reason why you have dad jokes. Before you guys came along, we were telling much different jokes.
I get that.
Yeah, there you go. Dad jokes explained. All right. Jokesoftheday.net. They've got some dad jokes in there too, but you know. All right. Andrew Malcolm, one of the premier dad joke tellers of all time. Also, the Prince of Twitter and the Regent of RedState.com. We'll do this again in a week, and we'll come up with even more jokes.
Let's do
We'll come
that.
we will come up
Thank
with
you.
almost as many jokes as our political system generates. So there you go.
And
That's a
hopefully we have a
promise.
higher approval rate.
I think we tell better jokes. That's the reason why.
That's that. Yeah, there we go.
All right,
Thanks,
Andrew.
Ed. Thanks,
Next
everybody.
week.
We'll see you next week.